So here's the deal. This is Logan. Everybody say hi, Logan. Hi, Logan. So Logan's been to how many DEF CONs?
Two.
This is your second.
This is my second.
So one and a third. Yes. Logan's never spoken at DEF CON, so he's a DEF CON virgin speaker. And we'll have to, we'll be gentle. So here's the deal. You used to come to DEF CON, and when we gave a talk, people in the audience were downright belligerent. They were usually very drunk. Some of you may still be drunk, but aren't nearly belligerent enough, in my humble opinion. No offense to the goons who are trying to control this place. There you go. So what I really want is a proper DEF CON greeting for Logan, which is a big fuck you, Logan, all in unison. One, two, three.
Fuck you, Logan.
There we go. Welcome to DEF CON.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no pressure. So, you gonna stand for the whole thing, or? Eventually. Just wait till the target's off your body. Painted them right there so you know where to aim. Anyway, so I normally start most of my talks with the same random thing, which is don't believe all the random shit that you hear when you come to a conference. And the same is true now, I think more than ever. You know, DEF CON has become almost polite at times. We queue like British. We all stand politely in line with our tea and wait to get into a room. And then they switch the rooms. And we swear under our breath, and then we scurry off into other rooms and whatever. But honestly, the undertone of the whole thing is the same, right? It's all about attack and defense, owning computers, defending computers, all that kind of stuff. People that get on stage, I've said it a million times, your ability to stand on stage here at a talk like this is just a testament to your ability to socially engineer your way past the paper submission people, right? Like, I wrote a book, or I started to write a book, and somebody had to pick up the pieces at the end. But I wanted to do a book, and I thought, I'll do wireless security. I don't know dick about it. And I wrote up a little proposal, sent it to O'Reilly, and 2 weeks later they FedExed me a contract, and I signed it, and I was suddenly an author. And I thought, well, I should buy some wireless cards and figure out how to secure these things. Not a joke. This is really how it happened. There wasn't a lot of due diligence involved in the entire process, so. Oh, I missed the flash and everything. That looked just retarded. So, all right. Here's the deal. That one doesn't make noise. gaming is big. We're going to talk about computer games. It's funny because I wasted the last 2 years of my life probably playing Team Fortress way more than I should have. How many people play Team Fortress? How many people played in the Team Fortress tournament that we have? How many people knew there was a Team Fortress tournament? Yeah, a handful, yeah. Lots of random questions. How many people have a social security number that starts with two? Okay. Anyway, so I encourage you, if you haven't played the Team Fortress tournament, even if you're not a gamer, please come by, because we really put a lot of effort into it. Yeah, we built a just big-ass crate. It was 1,100 pounds of gear that we shipped from Maryland to come to Vegas. We wrote a custom, or I didn't, these guys, Logan and a couple other guys, wrote a custom scoreboard with Flex and Python and a bunch of other stuff to score it. We got real-time video. And it's just kind of comical to watch, because a lot of people playing have never played, and they suck. And so you can watch the real-time video, and their heads blow up into a billion little pieces, and we all giggle. It's great. Anyway, when we were thinking about what we wanted to do for DEF CON, we said, well, why don't we do something about gaming? We're not in the game industry. That's not our native thing, but we do play a lot of video games, so by default that makes us an expert. I know how to configure a firewall, therefore I'm a security expert. Ooh, sorry. So gaming's a big industry. I don't need to go into it too much.
Rampage.
There's quite a few of those, by the way.
There we go.
They originally were every slide, but it was decided that might have been a little excessive, so now it's every other slide. So at the end, we'll vote. Was it excessive, all the Unreal and Quake noises that you'll hear? And if I hope that sincerely it wasn't excessive, because I really enjoy it, and I giggle every time I do this. This is just number of concurrent Steam users each night. You know, I got 2 million people online. It's a big business. Unfortunately, it's not a big enough business for Black Hat. We were rejected. This talk was rejected. Because, quote, it wasn't business enough. So $47 billion industry does not, apparently make a business. So we're here instead talking to DEF CON, bringing our A game, right? Woo, yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And by yes, we should preface this by saying we started setting up the Team Fortress 2 tournament yesterday morning. We started the first match at 1, and what really happened is
30.
1:30. He was still writing code, actually, for the scoreboard and everything today at 1:30, and continued to write code until I said, hey, dude, we have a talk to give in an hour and a half, and you actually looked at the slides yet, so you should probably stop coding. So anyway, we've been really wrapped up with the TF2 tourney, so we apologize if this is a little rough around the edges.
Monster kill.
So we'll, you know, have some levity with that. Here's the deal. Gaming, again, you know, I wasn't trying to rag on Black Hat, but seriously, people don't view gaming as a business. They don't view it as something that warrants serious discussion, right? Although, arguably, everybody in this room plays video games. You all know 100 people that play video games. It's obviously a multi-billion dollar industry. But when we talk about gaming, we talk about reviews of video games. We talk about industry analysts, you know, who's buying who and you know, what development studios are doing what now. But we don't really talk about the security much. Right? We don't talk about the security of game servers and things of that nature. You'll talk about it when there's money to be gained, or WoW is involved, apparently, in the two edge cases there. Maybe potentially the same edge case, you know, how do you farm more efficiently and can you get people to do it and make money? Yes, okay, then we're going to care about cheating. But in general, cheating is just kind of marginalized, and game server security is kind of marginalized. It's something that, you know, it's just the really geeky people. Because apparently video gamers make computer security people look like normal, well-adjusted suit-wearing types. Yes, they do. Yes, yeah, we all know. I love reading the Penny Arcade comics when they're like, you know, when you have online games and anonymity, it results in, you know, complete fucktards. You know, people that just leave all etiquette at the door, and that's apparently the gaming community. What we're trying to do here is have a start. Well, there's some people that are having kind of public discussions about cheating and game server security. We're trying to help contribute to that community and also hopefully open the eyes of people that are here to, you know, what's possible, what people are doing with respect to gaming security and cheating. People play a lot of different games. What we're really going to talk about, we're kind of short on time, so I'm going to...
Holy shit.
That one's got a 3? Well, it's every other slide, so that would be how many slides?
4.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, there's a screwball. All right. You missed. You were aiming for that guy. God. So I have the hard hat on, though, so I can just kind of duck and cover. For the rest of this talk, what we're really going to focus on is the Source dedicated server that Valve's released. Source has an interesting past. It's a platform that not only supports, you know, Valve's needs, but unlike a lot of other gaming engines, it's very customizable. It's very open, and they encourage people to, you know, extend it and do things with it. There's a huge number of Source servers deployed worldwide. The real reason we're talking about Source is not because it's fantastically interesting, but we all play a lot of TF2, so it's what we know, it's what we're familiar with, it's what we administer every day. Source server and most of the other gaming servers have this fantastically interesting problem, which is that you've got people on machines of all shapes and sizes with connections to networks of all shapes and sizes trying to play what boils down to a fair game, right? We're all trying to have a reasonable experience. It doesn't matter if you're on a P4 1.6 gigahertz on the ass end of a 256K DSL line or you're on a Fios line with an overclocked i7, right? They want it to be fair and they want it to be enjoyable. And it turns out that's actually a really hard math problem. There's an awful lot of complexity.
Holy shit!
They're applauding for it over next door, yeah. They think something else is going on over here. So, you know, it's a fantastically complex piece of software because you have to provide basically real-time services on a non-real-time operating system. So, and speaking of non-real-time, we run ours on CentOS, which I don't know if you've noticed has had a little bit of an issue lately. The main maintainer has kind of gone AWOL, and all the developers on the main CentOS.org page have posted an open letter of why this guy's an asshat. And then there's like a little FAQ on the side like, no, CentOS isn't going away. That guy's just a jerk, which is not something you want in your enterprise operating system, like on the main page. You imagine like going to Novell and seeing on the main page, it's like, oh, the CEO's a dick. You know? Let me install that. Where are the disks? Bring it on. So, you know, Linux by nature is not RTOS, you know, it's not real time, but these game servers have to somehow make these operating systems behave appropriately. They have to deal with all the data coming to and from the clients and basically make a fair game. So it you know, they control cheating and all this other crap. Really, it's an amazing piece of software that you get for free to run a server and do your own thing. And people give Valve untold amounts of shit for it. Like, I don't know how many people, who here administers Source servers? Anybody? A handful. You got some of the Source admin mailing lists. Like, people, I mean, there's public mailing lists on there. People just slagging on Valve all the time. I'm like, are you serious? Like, these guys give you, you know, millions of lines of code for free to do this stuff and form your own communities and whatever. Like, cut them some goddamn slack. Like, TF2, it's 2 years after it was created, and people, they still support the game. They're still adding new pieces. You know, most games that you buy, you're lucky if you get a patch when it's broken, right? Valve still supports the thing. It still adds functionality. So God bless Valve. Yay. Yay. I want to throw that in case any of their lawyers get upset about this talk. I find it's always nice to stalk them up first. And so by this point, the lawyers are kind of tuning out, like, oh, they're speaking nice about us. Just hit stop. So the one thing that's interesting, and we kind of found out after the fact, and I'll admit to being kind of an idiot here, that when we first started looking into this, we were like, well, it's a lot of binary, man, so I guess we're going to just have to disassemble and reverse engineer this thing. And it's big. I mean, a lot of libraries get hooked. All kinds of crazy shit happens. So we got debuggers running, and I'm trying to, like, just get a high-level view of the code and what's doing what. He's like, dude, you know, if you go into Steam, you can just download the source code. I was like, no, actually, I didn't know that. That's why I had a debugger open. Shit. So... Yeah, just because I can't doesn't mean I should, absolutely. We wasted a fair bit of time, because they have, like, anti-debugging stuff in there, we're subverting that, moving our way, it was ridiculous. Anyway, what's interesting is all the code base that they expose are, like, the game rules, object interaction, that kind of thing. So you basically build your own video game out of the source engine, which is really interesting. The one thing from a security perspective that's a pain in the ass is they actually don't release the source code for the stuff that we would actually care about. So there's stuff that happens where, you know, that you're doing something with an object in the game. And what, in a nutshell, what happens is that data about what you've done to manipulate it, for as an example, will get serialized and sent across the network to the server, or the server will take and serialize something and send it to the clients, vectors of who's moving where and all this kind of stuff. But it's all just a bit stream, right? So what happens is in the source code you'll see, and then serialize it and send it to the network, and then you just call this magical function, and that magical function only exists in object code. Yeah, that source code doesn't exist. And we discovered that after digging through many, many lines of source code. So then we went back to where we started. And by that point, we had to get ready for the TF2 tournament and didn't make as much progress as we wanted to because of basically we're idiots. Head nodding. That's where he doesn't want to use the mic. He's like, yep, we're dicks.
Headshot.
That one's not really important. Pong, I love this thing. Pong, why was Pong successful? Because everyone could grasp the concept. It had 8 words in the front, avoid missing the ball for high score, and insert coin. That was the entire premise, right? Not complicated. Even drunk people in a bar could put a quarter in and play. Woohoo! Even drunk people in a bar can play TF2. Why? There's 2 colors, right? If you're on the blue team, you kill the red team. If you're on the red team, you kill the blue team. Sometimes there's this abstraction. There's capture points and flags and stuff. They don't matter. That game's fun because people blow up, right? You find people the opposite color of you, you blow them up. Woohoo! And then you start calling them names and whatever. There's also some fantastic work that they did on the art direction. And if you want to grab this talk later, just for that URL alone at the bottom, it's like a 2-hour-long discussion on the palette choices and all the weird rendering stuff they had to do to get the feeling for, you know, the kind of 50s-style cartoony bits of TF2 that they wanted to get. They put a lot of effort in the game. I have a lot of respect for them. I sound like an Apple fanboy, except I'm a Valve fanboy right now. This is not important. There's a lot more
impressive.
Thank you. A lot more slides. The server has remote administration, like, you know, SSH, except not encrypted. basically, it's just remote console commands. You send a password and the command that you want, and it changes it. And this is everything from changing levels to low-level rate manipulation to, you know, enabling cheats and doing all kinds of other stuff. So it's just wide open. There's also rate limiting that you can do because they know it's unencrypted. They know it's difficult to control. So they try to rate limit, you know, how often you can connect. They have this nasty history of having bugs that if you try to connect to the Archon console too many times, it just crashes the server anyway. It's a cute DOS, you know. And they resolve it, and then they keep bringing that bug back. I think it's one of their favorites, apparently. The one thing about Archon access is it's damn near equivalent to shell access. You can save files wherever you have access to save files in the file system. If you get really cute, you can execute code even. So, you know, your Archon password is, you know, like any other password, a very bad thing. But it's amazing the number of places you go online where you read about, like, game servers and people are having permissions problem. You know what the answer is? Run it as root! And I'm a big fan of running as root. I don't know how many people have seen the website with the petition, like, you know, real men run as root. You know, Chuck Norris ran as root. So I'm a big fan of that, but when it comes to like millions of lines of random gaming code, maybe a jail's kind of prudent thing, you know, just a hunch. Anyway, they have plugins too. This is actually kind of neat. So if you want to interact with the engine directly, you can do you can write plugins that hook all these public APIs that they have. The problem is some of the APIs are pretty complex, so people have written kind of abstraction layers to allow lay people to write reasonable plugins to do total gameplay modifications or just administrative functions or something like that. Real popular one that we use and we're using on the server in the TF2 room is MetaMod with SourceMod. And again, this is layers of abstraction on top of APIs, right? Again, we didn't do a lot of research into this, but one can assume when you start abstracting things like that, there's a long history in the security community of shit going wrong. And there's a history of security issues with MetaMod, SourceMod, and people enabling things that they shouldn't, and things being opened that they shouldn't, and things of that nature. So, it's a big extensible system, is the lesson of the story. And what it results in...
Dominating.
Is why we're all here. The female ones are better than the male ones, in my humble opinion. Is cheating, right? And that's pretty much the big focus that we're going to talk about today, is really trying to control cheating. There's ways to cheat that are idiotically simple, and there's ways to cheat that are fantastically interesting, and would make for actually probably a good black hat talk. Someone should submit something. I'm sorry. I did make an assumption there, sir. No, it's a good DEF CON talk. You're correct. Damn it. Wow, that was bad. I missed that by like a foot. I'm gonna demonstrate a real simple one. You can just replace sound files on the computer to have different effects, right? And you would think, what difference does a sound file make? Well, there's a class in Team Fortress 2. How many people have actually played TF2? I'm sorry, raise your hands. Number of people. Holy shit, a lot of people. So in general, for those that haven't, there's 9 classes in TF2, and they all have different capabilities. One of them's the spy. And the spy can become invisible and sneak up behind you and then become visible as a team member from your team and then stab your ass in the back and you die. No questions asked, right? There's no, oops, I didn't kill you because I didn't stab you hard enough. It's an instant death. So they're really assholes. And so anything that you can do to prevent the spy from being an asshole is viewed in general as a plus, except for by the people that are playing spy. So what you can do is they make little subtle noises when they uncloak. And so here's the spy uncloaking. Is that playing? No. There we go. You have to listen very carefully. Hear that whoosh? That was him cloaking. And then uncloak. And then you die. Right? So that's, and when you're in a game with 24 people and there's stuff blowing up around you, you don't hear the little whoosh. You know, that's not a fanciful sound. It you just get stabbed.
Impressive.
Thank you. Here we go. So this is with a slightly different sound to give the player a little bit of an advantage. You'll hear the whoosh. Here it comes. There's a whoosh. There we go. And then here's the new sound.
I'm a scat man.
So that one is And it's funny because I gave this talk at Donicon, not this talk, but a variant of it that was focused more on administration. And I had made this demo on my main gaming rig, but I left that sound in. So I've been playing with that sound on forever. And some dude like called me on it, like on some server the other day. He's like, "Gee, Dad, you have really good hearing." And I'm like, "Yes, that's exactly it." Shit, I'm that guy. Other things you can do, there are certain materials that will show through walls. I've made some maps just to play around. You can make maps through the editor. And my kids actually made a map, and they used all these decals on the map. And you can see the decals all the way through the entire level, regardless if there's a wall in front of you. And they loved it. And so there's like this level, and all it is just decals everywhere. And you have no idea how far away they are because they're like at a wall. It's 100 feet away. It's just bouncing into things because all you see is these decals that go through. So certain materials will show through walls and things of that nature. So here's a demo of certain materials. Say people's clothing and their skin has been changed so you can see through walls. Let's just say it gives you a little advantage. guy's on the blue team. He sees red people coming down this hallway to his right, knows who he is, the class they are, knows how many they are, sees them completely. I mean, this is just fantastic bounce of information, right? This guy knows where everybody is on the other team. So he dies, sees all his own team members through walls, runs across, sees people all over the place. You know, this is an obvious kind of cheat, right? it's just carnage. Anyway, there's nothing really funny about this except for the fact this guy just mows everyone down. You notice their heads are a different color? Because you can actually, and Logan's getting to this, there are bots that you can have that will focus on certain colors that are on the screen. And when the bot sees that pink color, it just aimed there for you. So, yeah, it turns out it's really useful.
Dominating!
Whoa, that was loud. Shit, that's funny. It keeps getting funnier. That's the part I love. So how do you stop this? I mean, seriously, it's child's play, but it completely changes the nature of the game, right? Like, when you're playing on a server, I've been on servers where I've had either a bad day or some guy was really cheating, and it's not fun. Like, honest to God. And when games stop being fun, people stop playing them, people stop buying them, and game companies lose money, right? There are lots of games who started out kind of fun, but for whatever reason, people just didn't get into it, or there was a lot of cheating, and people... Was that Unreal Tournament? Yes, yeah, UT. Yeah, my favorite thing about UT, how many people played Unreal Tournament? You know, and they have the bots. Okay, and how many people have seen the Penny Arcade comic where, like, dude doesn't realize that they're bots and is talking with them and, like, talking smack to them or whatever? I first got Unreal Tournament. I did that. I was on a server, and I'm, like, beating the hell out of these guys, and suddenly some dude joins, and I'm, like, chatting and whatever, and he's like, guy, those are all bots. I'm like, really? I've been here for an hour. And then I read that Penny Arcade, and I'm like, Jesus, apparently this is like an endemic problem, you know? Anyway, so how do you control this? So the server can implement this thing called SV Pure. So there's all these variables that get set with the server that control how the server acts, and this one, SV Pure, basically is a way that Valve tries to control these client-side cheats, these really simple yet highly effective cheating mechanisms. By default, it's SV Pure is 0. You turn it to 1, and it scans for some sounds, some models and things. You know, basically the stuff that I showed you would be caught with SV 1. Some custom content's allowed. People use sprays, like little things, images that they can put on walls and stuff to say, like, their clan was here or whatever. And custom materials, certain things can be whitelisted on the server side. So this is a real flexible way to control that. SV2 is basically, I'm going to scan everything that you possibly could change, and if you did change it, then I'm not going to allow you to join the server. There's a couple problems with this. One, it increases load time, right? It's basically an antivirus scan. It's chugging along, rah, 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 and it's already, I mean... Seriously, it takes a while to load TF2. Like, no screwing around. A lot of these source-based games take a long time to load. I've got an SSD at home that I use basically just for loading TF2. It's fast. And I get really pissed off when I get back in a regular spindle because it takes so long to load the game. The other problem with it is it uses CRC32. Which arguably we know how to subvert, right? like we've handled MD5 pretty well. I think we can do CRC32 in our sleep. Like, it's probably like an option on like the Microsoft calculator to like subvert CRC32. So it's not a real security mechanism. But again, it stops the ankle biters. It stops idiots like me from just replacing the spy uncloak sound without making the WAV file match the original CRC32 checksum. So there's obviously some limitations of what you can do when you're just searching and replacing, you know, these skins and these sounds and that kind of thing. If you want to automatically control your player, you want to automatically aim, shoot, that kind of thing, you have to actually look under the hood of the source server, and that's what we're going to go into next, is some lower-level cheats of how people manipulate the source engine.
Dominating!
So that one wasn't even funny, right? I mean, it was just, no... Was it the same as last time? Wait till you get to his slides. They're all the same. No, I changed them for you. No problem. This was his quote. I think all my slides, when they flip, say perfect. Return, return, return. That's because they are.
It was sarcasm.
It was sarcasm, yes. He used 8-point font, by the way. I had to change that. Anyway, so one thing that Valve uses is Valve Anti-Cheat. It's called VAC. A lot of you that play Valve games are familiar with this. What this thing really is again, it's a more sophisticated antivirus program, if you will, except it's not looking for malware, it's looking for changes to the source engine. It unfortunately isn't that good. It's not a behavioral analysis, it's not the holy grail of anti-cheat. It's looking for basically blacklisted bad stuff. You know, someone wrote a cheat. Someone found out the cheat, sent the information to Valve. Valve figured out how it worked. Valve writes a little rule somewhere, gets caught up in VAC, and then anyone who's found using that gets banned for life through VAC. It's pretty simple. It's effective at stopping stuff that's in wide deployment, but it's not effective in stopping people who are willing to take a cheat, change it a little bit. You know, it's just like modern-day networks, right? Right? We've got antivirus that's great for commodity viruses, but you change that one little bit, and you can go own an entire enterprise, right? That's how it works. I mean, I'm dealing with enterprises all the time right now who have massive problems because someone recompiled a binary with, like, one little change or repacked it or whatever, and magically it flies through all the security protocols and pops everything. Whoopsie! You know, same problem with Mortal Kombat reference. No one plays Mortal Kombat anymore. No. No one. God. That was like my high school. Anyway, so here's what here's where we're going to turn it over to Logan, and he's going to talk about other things. I still have a microphone.
Great. So I started looking at the Darkstorm source. First I started going down the line of writing my own cheat, and then I found the Darkstorm source, fortunately, because these things are really, really complicated. Not only do you have to know how to do common hacker techniques such as DLL injection and, you know, process injection and all that stuff, but you have to know DirectX and vector math, and it's impressive what these guys can do.
And Darkstorm is just one example of basically a cheating toolkit that is out there, right? There's lots of people out there that have cheating toolkits. Some of them are publicly available, like Darkstorm. Others are available only to, you know, friends of friends and that kind of thing, like the carding industry or whatever. You know, if you know someone, you can get in, you get the cheat. Because the cost of failure here for all these guys is the same. If their cheats are found out, they become worthless, right? And you can't cheat anymore, and they're not cool. And so Darkstorm is a good example of one that's pretty extensible and pretty flexible, and we got some examples from it. But again, we didn't write most of this. This is just, you know, stuff we took from Darkstorm. We're using it as an example of this is how it works, this is how people get past VAC and inject themselves into these programs.
Perfect.
Told you.
All right, so the first step in loading a cheat that is going to inject into the process is naturally injecting it. We do this through standard injection techniques, get the process ID, allocate space in the address, virtual address space, and then create your remote thread and kick off, you know, every function you want to hook inside of there. It does a couple things. Well, there are a couple different ways you can hide from VAC, and this particular cheat employs one of them, removing the PE header. That's it. But while I was looking around and analyzing some of these other cheats, you can do a lot of different things to hide yourself.
The linked list one, I think, is an interesting one. You should tell them about that one.
That's a standard virus technique to remove yourself from the linked list that describes all the modules that are loaded in a particular process. And VAC will go through and, you know, they'll look at that, and that's how they'll get their list of modules to analyze and take a signature of. They also use the PE header as a starting point to start their signatures too. So effectively removing your PE header hides you from VAC, and it's almost impossible for VAC to start scanning your memory space.
Perfect.
Oh, I changed him, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I said before, this is pretty much the only hiding technique that Darkstorm employs. Pretty standard. Grabs the image header and just nulls out the bits that say, I'm a PE. All right, and then the first thing we need to do is undo some flags that say that we can't call certain functions, because these functions Valve considers protected, and they know that they could be used in order to cheat. And so we go down the line of this PVAR struct and just flip bits, and that's basically what's happening right here in this loop.
Monster kill.
And this is the first.
It got funny again. It's like Family Guy, right? Like it starts out Oh. Okay, y'all got it. I don't even need to explain it.
All right, so the first function that we hook is called createMove. Pretty well named because it is just your move with the character. Every tick of the game, this function is called. And there can be, 30, 40 ticks a second that happen. So every time a tick happens, we call this function and we start down our line of, what do we want to do to cheat? Aimbot. I'm sure most of you know what an aimbot is. Unfortunately, there's no video of an aimbot because Valve released a patch and removed a particular function that was used by this aimbot to aim. So it would have taken a considerable amount of work to emulate that function and get it working again. Didn't have the time because of the TF2 tourney.
Yeah, we have to have an excuse, right? It's not because we're lazy or just dumb or anything. It's something else going on.
Rampage.
All right, so here's a basic premise of how it works, though. You grab your list of entities, entity being anything on the board, anything that is moving or stationary, and you just go through an if statement and say, is it a player? Is it not me? Is it solid? Are they on the other team? Yes, then grab where I am, grab where they are, and give me a vector. Aim my position in that direction, and if I'm aiming at the right portion of their body, fire. Five to choose from, but I don't know anybody that chooses anyone but the head, seriously. The speed hack. So this one is actually pretty deductible on a lot of servers. People have written a lot of plugins to perform the security that VAC doesn't, which is kind of strange. I mean, we were talking about SourceMod and MetaMod before. There's a serious plugin that's written by a guy named Kaigen, which defeats a lot of these cheats. So while I was going around on just getting experience cheating, I don't cheat normally, as evidenced, and you'll see in a second in the videos. I was worried that some of these servers would have been employing this mod, and I was going to be caught, but apparently they weren't. So the speed hack, real quick, it just sets a CVAR, which is a console variable inside of SRCDS, which says what is my host timescale speed, and you can set it between 1 and 25. You don't want to go above 7 because you can't move. It's too fast. It's just insanely fast. 7's about right. So if you're playing with this, 7 is what you want to do.
Humiliation.
No pressure at all.
Rapid fire. So there's a couple characters in the game that have pistols. And basically, you can flip a bit, and your pistol turns into a chain gun. And that's exactly what happens right here. It just comes in, sets the bit to fire, and you go to town just mowing people down. This works really well with the constant criticals cheat, because when you have a chain gun that's just shooting criticals constantly, it hurts people. And ESP. So ESP is... it's just what you think it is, ESP. You're getting information about targets from a distance, just like you're finding out stuff about their class, their hit points, what weapon they're holding, and you can see it through walls. So there's a good example. Real quick how it works. You're basically taking the model that's drawn on the screen for source or SRCDS, and you're appending these values to it, and so you'll see in the next picture what happens.
Double kill.
If you can see that pretty well, but that's basically based on the weapon he's holding. That's a scout on the other side of the wall, and I know he's at full life. So that's what ESP does for you. And I think we got a video.
Oh yes, can I annotate this video for you? This is my favorite. So Logan,
if I say no, will you not?
No, it's not. It's not an optional problem. So. I need to stand up for this because this one makes me laugh. I actually almost fell out of my chair when I first watched this video. Logan doesn't cheat a lot. And so imagine, if you will, you're playing a game and someone shoots you from across the room and you have to respawn. You're going to go back and look and see if that person's still there, right? Because you don't want to get shot again. Well, Logan has ESP, so he knows where everybody is. But yet, he's still looking where there's no one there because he's so worried he's going to get shot in the head. So first, he's going to get dominated by
Boogie Girl.
Boogie Girl. Okay. So Boogie Girl just dominates him.
Sorry. I'm old Greg, by the way.
And so now he's going to round the corner, and he's got ESP, so he knows where everybody is. Boogie Girl was on the roof, and now Boogie Girl jacks him in the head. Same person. Now he's really scared, okay? He doesn't want to be embarrassed again because he knows this is going to show up at DEF CON. So he's a sniper, and he rounds the corner. And he looks up there, and there's no one there, right? There's no ESP information, but he's still looking up there. He's really worried that maybe she's got a cheat that disables the ESP and shoots him in the head. I'm sorry, man. And then he...
How about it?
Yeah. He does have a redeeming shot up here in a minute.
I have a couple. Come on. Give me some credit.
Well, I mean, you were able to pull the trigger successfully. I'll give you credit.
Thanks.
I don't know if there's a way to fast forward this or not. This gets kind of boring. I mean, but in general, you get the idea. Oh, here he goes.
This is a good part.
Yeah. So the scout was coming behind the wall, saw him coming the whole time, and he actually managed to hit him in the head. That was good. Yeah.
Thank you.
Cordial. Damn it. So obviously, this is a lot of information. You can't see through the walls. You can't see exactly the characters, but you actually still get the character information through the walls, what they are, how much health they have, that kind of thing. So it's a fantastically useful sheet to control, you know, at least know where everybody is. That's probably good.
Hold on. Just a second. One more.
One. There you go. Good job.
Okay.
Ten.
Killing spree.
All right, constant criticals. So this is pretty useful, but at the same time, it's kind of a bane because the way that it happens, there's not just a magic bit that says every shot you're gonna make is gonna be a critical. We actually have to try and compute our probability for a random shot for a critical, and on every tick of the game, we try and see if our next shot's going to be a critical. And if it is, if we're pressing the button, then we fire. So this can result in some lag time. So sometimes you'll press the button and nothing will happen. And sometimes you'll press the button and two crit rockets will come out. So it's interesting, and there's a video to go along with it also.
So for those that don't know, a critical is basically, it's the same shot as another kind of shot, it just does more damage, like 50% more damage. And in TF2, they also are lit up, and they're a different color. So it becomes kind of abundantly obvious, because normally you get one about every 5 to 10, and if you start shooting like 20 in a row, it's really obvious. So what you'll see Logan here doing in a minute is shooting in different directions in different places, just so not everyone sees the fact that he's just unloading critical rockets over and over and over and over.
I was pretty worried that my own team was going to turn me in for cheating, even though it was helping them out, but they didn't, so that was a good thing.
Hit the button?
Twice?
Twice. Oh, it's like a critical. You hit the button and nothing happens. Woo. Don't make me come up here. Wow. I'm going to go with no video.
Impressive.
I would just keep moving.
Okay. All right. So then you can do a thing called a wall hack. So this will basically draw the materials on the models in the game, but it sets a certain value. These values down here. These values right here. When I set materials flag is called. And that it sets the z-index to something different than the wall. So whenever a character is displayed on the screen, you see it instead of the wall. You can see that pretty well there. There's the demo man. He's sitting right there, obviously behind the wall, but I can see him, and I know exactly where, you know, what direction he's facing and what he's doing. There's also a bunch of stickies right there. That's part of ESP
Dominating.
And no scope. So I don't know if you guys noticed when I was in the video back there, but normally when you're a sniper, you have a scope, and your scope looks like that. The one on the right, that is. The one on the left is what happens when you execute this code and remove the materials for all four corners of the scope. It's a huge advantage as a sniper, being able to run around, zoomed in, and see, 100% of the world.
Rampage.
You want me to tackle this? Or you got it.
Yeah, that's actually the end of the Dark Storm. So
okay. Switch. All right, a couple of things real quick. One, SRCDS will log, just like anything else. And what's interesting about the logging is that there's a lot of third-party products that will pick up the logs and display like how well you're doing, how much you kick ass, whatever. And you go to web pages, HLStats, HLStatsX, or some of the more well-known versions of that. Anyone can write code to do that, and there's lots of third-party logging and log analysis utilities that are out there, including the ones that we wrote, which turned out were ripe for SQL injection and DOS attacks. because what?
Are you out there, Peter O'Toole?
No. There's a guy who was at ShmooCon?
Yeah, he got me at ShmooCon.
At ShmooCon, he had a character in his name that killed our parser outright. And Logan fixed it, and then inadvertently commented that code out, and then brought that code to DEF CON, and same dude showed up and crashed our parser again. Just kind of a cute trick to have it happen twice with the same guy. It's basically, this is standard stuff, right? It takes data, it's going to parse it with a language, Perl, Python, whatever, it's going to shove it in a database, so it's ripe for issues like SQL injection. Every once in a while, I'll see somebody running around on a server with, Robert semicolon drop tables as his name. Oh, it's little Bobby tables, just the greatest thing ever. And like three people get it, and everyone else like, who's the dick with the name? And meanwhile, like, I don't know how many. It's amazing the grasp of extended ASCII characters that gamers have. Like, I can't type in a backwards RF, but sure shit, apparently, like, ASCII, 212 is that thing, and some entire clan has that as their clan tag. Like, screw off, I know how to do it. That was another problem we had, extended ASCII. Yeah, barfed a lung on that stuff. I think even today, we still just basically drop it, right? Yeah, we just ignore it. So if you have a fancy clan tag that doesn't have regular ASCII, fuck off. meant that in the nicest possible way. 5 minutes, yes. I think she might have thrown me out for other reasons. Real quick, so there has to be code releases because we're here at DEF CON. So unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of the security-relevant code that we wanted to have to release here, partially because we did get so wrapped up with this. But one thing we wanted to do is turn back to community all the scoreboard and parsing stuff that we have for the real-time stats tracking, for the streaming video and all the other stuff. So and team sign-ups and the whole deal. So if anyone runs LAN parties or anything, there's actually a lot of code here that would be very useful for you. So that'll be available on the NoMoos website here shortly. We have version 1 up there right now, but version 2 will be released after DEF CON, since Logan, I think, is still writing said code.
No, it's done.
Oh, it's done? Yeah. Okay. You sure? I'm taking your editors away, and we'll see what happens. So, and at some point, you can go to our website and look at the hokey video setup we had for ShmooCon, which involved two transcodings, and I shit you not, an audio loopback cable. For those that don't know, that's a really short headphone cable that goes from audio out to audio in. That's how we're capturing the audio. Yes, yes, that's exactly, yeah, it's idiotic. So there was another release I was hoping to have, which was a Wireshark protocol dissector, which was going to dig around and figure out all the innards of the source protocol stuff. Put in a bunch of work doing that, and unfortunately what I've got so far written is basically I can see the first two 32-bit counters that are little endian. What? I can find the strings that are all in there in TLV format. So it parses all that stuff out, but it doesn't get all the vectors of who's moving where yet. I'm still trying to figure out all the serialized stuff. I hope to have that done, actually, this year. It's still a project I'm working on, but it wasn't done by this point. And if anybody's interested in helping out, feel free to let me know. One last...
Humiliation.
Yes. One last thing. ShmooCon 2010. Woo! How many people here have been to ShmooCon? Hot diggity. For those that don't know, ShmooCon's a security conference that the Shmoo Group puts on in Washington, D.C. every year. It's been the same place for the last 5 years. There have been no more. We've had people come up and tell us, like at ShmooCon 4, that they've been to all six. Apparently it was so good. There was a couple extras. It's a lot of fun. We try to, be honest members of the community, give back as much as we can through ShmooCon. Anyway, you can ask other people that have been if you haven't been. It's a good time. We really enjoy it, and we really enjoy having people show up. We have dates now, February 5th through 7th, 2010, again at the Warman Park Marriott in D.C. CFP will be open by the end of the month. And you can follow ShmooCon on Twitter or go to ShmooCon.org for more info as it's released. But you can expect the CFP will largely be like the CFP that we had before and most other hacker cons have as well, which is have a cool project, submit a rational write-up, you might get in. So, anyway, that's lots of humiliation. This is kind of a scattershot, sawed-off shotgun of a talk, but we appreciate y'all showing up. There's a lot of information here. I mean, there was just source code that we just, washed over or whatever. Feel free to download this presentation. Feel free to download some of these cheats from the places that we reference. Have fun with them. Get yourself an extra Steam account, though, when you do, because you might get your ass banned. But it's really interesting because, as Logan pointed out, this isn't just a cheating thing. If you can write a cheat that gets past VAC, you can write malware that gets past antivirus, right? It's the same techniques. We're doing the same tricks to get past VAC as we are to get past McAfee and Symantec and whatever else. And so it's kind of you're killing two birds with one stone, right? You're getting your rocks off, blowing people up while you're playing a video game, and you're learning how to write malware. So it's like a double whammy. Who wouldn't do this? It's like an introductory course to malware. Giggle, giggle, quack. All right, I think that's it. If you guys have questions, you can catch us later on at the TF2 tourney, where Logan will still be writing code. I appreciate you guys showing up. Oh, run!